Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know.
You need to know we're really impressing the intern on his first day. I'm gonna tell you that. Really, that is a bad bang up work right there.
Awesome.
I'll tell you, casting
I
the guys.
I went a little early on the earlier than I normally would on the throw, and I should have alerted Jed to that.
Yeah, yeah. The best was the panicked look of Jed, just looking in every direction. Like
I know it's the poor carpenter who blames his tools, but I mean, let's take a look at the equipment I'm working with here.
Yeah, well, it's you know.
And I'm talking about myself. That's like my brain. I'm an idiot is what I'm saying.
Do you want to see the half of Kendrick Perkins' face I can see on the TV?
That is a good view. He adds a lot. He's just one of the best analysts.
You know who's really proud to bring you this segment? Cass and the guys at All Weather Decks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they are thrilled.
If you want something that's put together well, call the people at All Weather Decks. They will do a nice job.
That is yes. Unlike the performance that we're putting together here today for you, they are a 22-time winner of the Angie's List Super Service Award and can build that ultimate outdoor living space. Call today at 913-206-1974. Cass and my guys have you covered the way they took care of me and my family. I had folks. Man, it couldn't have been better. I know we had a big storm blow through, mm-hmm. but it cooled things off. We had like a 72-degree evening sitting outside. In fact, even some of the old people decided they needed the fire pit.
I liked it.
On a day, it was. It was like, yeah. Very nice. Curtis was one of them. Yeah, he's one of them. He said his feet were cold. I don't know. I don't know what it means.
I had a blanket over my legs.
Yeah. I thought that was classy. Allweatherdecks.net. And relax. Let's get you started with the news of the day when it comes to your Kansas City Royals. We will start with one Mike Matheny, manager, giving us what the latest is on Mondesi and the fact that he's still improving.
Yeah, he'll be doing some more work today. So we'll get a little better idea. Each time we give him a little bit more, we get a better idea of what that timeline might look like. But seems to be coming along well.
I mean, there's got to be some red ass in Mike Matheny somewhere, right? I've seen nothing but the nicest guy you ever want to see. But at some point, doesn't he get tired of this dance?
I would think it's almost twofold. One,
I'll tell you when he gets tired of it, it's when his job is on the line, which I don't think it is now.
No.
But could be next year.
But I think it's more, it goes beyond. I think just simply a guy who doesn't seem to want to commit totally or isn't doing whatever it takes to get on the field is annoying to someone like Mike Matheny, who was always a gamer as a player. You know, that's antithetical to what he was as a player. And having to repeatedly go out there in front of reporters and take bullets for that guy probably adds to it. I can't imagine Mike Matheny is happy at all with this.
Listen.
And not just because he's losing a player, but because it's the situation Adalberto Mondesi's putting him in.
Mondesi's going to play whenever he's going to play, and it is what it is. But I just think at some point you get tired of being made to look a fool.
Yes.
Well, we took him out for precautionary reasons. We're going to do some work. The next day, we're going to do some work and see if he can go. Now he's on the IL 10 days and still isn't ready to come back, and you've got, you know, the face of the organization, Ryan Lefevre, at least the face of the broadcast portion of the organization, Ryan Lefevre, talking about, well, they are worried about him flying. They get, you know, those flights, those chartered flights will really get to you.
When you've lost 8 of 9, and one of the main reasons you've lost 8 of 9 is that your offense is slipping, you don't have a very deep lineup, and one of the guys you think is going to be an offensive force for you isn't there. There's got to be, I'm sure, some gnashing of teeth in the manager's office of the Royals.
I'm not going to call Mondesi still being out bad news because I expected it. I mean, if 7 days from now we're sitting here next Monday and still having this conversation, who's surprised? If you are, I mean, you know, it must be fun having every movie be brand new to you no matter how many times you've watched it. Because I've seen this movie.
I know how it ends. Okay? The sled is still Rosebud. Okay? The crippled guy, he's Kaiser Sose. Okay? The Bruce Willis is dead.
It is dead.
It's still there. Okay? They're all still ending the same way. And if you don't know what the ending is, you're the only one not paying attention. Sorry. And that, and the unfortunate part is that goes for that organization. That's where they sit right now.
Yep.
But then he had more bad news. This was about Andrew Benintendi's injury. He is going to the disabled list. It happened on a throw yesterday in Oakland.
Felt something at the time and felt pretty good. But when he got up this morning, it really locked up on him and got an x-ray done, and there was a hairline fracture. So it's something that obviously not the news we were hoping for, but going to have an opportunity for somebody else to step in and help us out. Edward Olivares is going to be the move on the roster, and Ollie will be in the lineup today.
Ollie.
Opportunity for Edward Olivares.
Yep.
But it sucks for the Royals. Their offense blows right now, and he's been by far, well, he and Salvador Perez have been the two guys carrying him.
Yep. Olivares is, I mean, they don't lose too much with the bat based on what you've seen from him today.
They lose a lot.
I think you lose that power because Benintendi can hit the ball over the fence the opposite way.
Benintendi's been getting on base. Yeah, He's been doing everything.
And but yesterday you saw just another example of that.
I think the scarier part is this is the same type of injury he had in Boston. So this is looking like a chronic condition for Andrew Benintendi. So that's, to me, the scary part there. Chris Bubich, the third of the three young guns that are up right now to go. The performance, not spectacular. He, we'll wait and see. He's had his successes. Matheny said he did like Bubich's approach, just needs to execute it better.
I thought he came out, you know, right from the first hitter, establishing the third base side of the plate, elevating a little bit, and then trying to get right back down in the zone. Down's going to be key for him. And for many young pitchers, it's a hard thing to learn to be able to elevate and then get right back down to what your strength is, which is the bottom. And when he's down, that's when his fastball is effective. That's when his changeup's effective. But there are times, and certainly certain hitters in this league, that you can maximize the ability to use the top of the zone. It's just how many pitches are going to take you to get back down on top with good angle and plane on the ball.
You'll see guys go up, and then boom at the bottom. He can't get back down. When he tries to go back down, it's
in the middle,
center cut,
and he does not have the kind of velocity to just blow people away. Bubich knows he has to improve his location.
You know, everything's just middle majority right now, and it's been killing me to give up seven homers and not even nine innings. You know, that's a product of, you know, leaving the ball over the heart of the plate, and you know, I don't have that kind of stuff to be able to do that. So I think it's hurt me this week and really the last two or three times out as to where, you know, I was executing a lot better at the beginning of the year, you know, going side to side with the fastball and being able to throw the changeup where I want to. But it's just, you know, it hurts when you leave the ball over the middle of the plate consistently, and that can't happen.
He's self-aware.
Yep.
I mean, I like that part of the equation.
He was, but the only thing is, I remember being impressed with his self-awareness after his last start in L.A., and then he went out and did the same thing. So, I mean, it is good that he knows what he has to do, but, man, I mean, every pitch that gets hit out, some guys will take a good pitch and do something with it you can't believe. And every homer you see, you're like, well, I know what the replay is going to be there. Change up, 80 miles an hour. Right down the middle.
Yeah. One more from Mike Matheny talking about the offense. Another day, he says, where his team just missed too many opportunities.
And some opportunities to do something there in the second. It was good to see Nicky put together a really good at-bat and at least get one. We've talked about that a number of times, but, you know, we're still looking for that big hit, that one that allows us to put a little space. And then we need to shut down right after that, too. And unfortunately gave up a couple more after we did get one. But, you know, just one of those that the big hit kind of eluded us. Had a couple guys come up big, but nobody on, with Santana and great swing by Benny. Need those big hits when we get guys in scoring position. We got multiple guys on base.
stop with the big hits. I mean, that's a pet peeve of mine. Every manager's like, oh, yeah, what? No, nobody needs big hits. What you need is more on base and more slug, mm-hmm. right? More bases every time you do connect with the baseball and more times that you get yourself onto the base. More people jamming up the bases will eventually come around to score. More people hitting the ball hard, allowing people to take more than one base at a time will help you to come around and score. The problem is that they are currently 22nd in on-base percentage out of 30 major league teams and 17th in slug.
I'm surprised they're that high.
I am too. I was stunned to see them that high in the slugging.
Yeah.
Actually, 22 and on base, I thought was probably a little higher than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
But that's it's not about clutch hits. Like clutch hits are, you're chasing a unicorn. They don't exist, right? You're going to hit what you're going to hit. You're going to walk what you're going to walk. And you're going to hit the ball as far as you hit the ball, as far as you hit the ball. That's what it is. The back of your baseball card is what you will be. Accumulate more guys who hit the ball, walk, and then when they hit the ball hard. That's what has to happen.
If you do that, I mean, teams that look like they are good in the clutch are good in all situations, and some of those just happen to be in the clutch. They aren't a team that necessarily hits better in the clutch than they do in other situations. They just hit better, period, and they're not doing any of that right now.
We'll see if the Royals can get things going here now. Lost 8 of 9 and pretty much now at 10.5 back. You'd say, okay, they're not going to contend, which to me at least sets their course on what they will be listening to at the trade deadline on July 31st. NBA playoffs, the Nuggets swept out of the playoffs. Their head coach, Michael Malone, surprised to see Nikola Jokic get called for the flagrant two.
I still haven't processed it, to be honest with you. You know, game four, an elimination game at home. Before they had determined their decision on the flagrant two, I had watched a replay myself on one of the coaches' computers behind the bench. And I just assumed, and we all know you should never assume, but I assumed it would be a flagrant one at the worst. From my vantage point and watching the replay, I did not think it was a non-basketball play with malicious intent. I think it was a frustration foul. I feel Nikola probably felt the last couple of plays when he had the ball, he had not received a foul call. And, you know, he went over there to take a foul, which he's done plenty of times before. A lot of players do that. And I just didn't feel like it warranted a flagrant two ejection because he's making a play on the ball.
What a load of crap.
That's not what you just said, though,
He
coach.
Just said what it was, going over there with intent, and then he goes, he went over there to commit a foul. Yeah. That's also known as intent, Michael Maloney, you dumbass. Like, I am stunned by the avalanche. I think it's almost like, what is Twitter's quickest reaction? And then everybody just falls in line. I heard a discussion about, like, well, he wound up. Well, what does that mean? It doesn't matter. He went for the ball and got him in the face. He wound up like he was going to throw a punch. And then, yes, swung his hand forward. Yes, did get part of the ball. But he went flying over there to commit a foul at a time that it's not stop the clock time.
No.
Okay, which, by the way, no NBA ref can get their whistle out of their sphincter to call that. You almost have to knock a guy down. It's like they're clearly he grabbed his arm. Like, are you going to call the foul or not? You would call that if it were in the middle of the game. Now when you know they're trying to foul, you don't give them the foul. That's ridiculous. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying NBA refs are great. I think they're all over the place. But I'm fine if you want to say, hey, I don't understand why the rules can't be the rules. Right, you cannot, if you're like, he shouldn't have been thrown out of the game, that shouldn't have been a flagrant two foul, that's fine, but you can never bitch about the unwritten rules of baseball because you're calling for unwritten rules in basketball.
He literally did it at the beginning of that clip.
His coach said he went over there to try to foul him. Intent. He winded up. It was not a natural basketball play. You do not wind up to throw your hand at the ball to make a steal. You don't. It was not a natural basketball play. And he hit him up around the head.
Yeah.
If you want to say, hey, I don't think it should go there. I think he should have been left in. I don't think it's quite strong enough to be that foul. Okay, I'll listen to it. But the way the rule is written, this is one of the handful of times that actually officials adjudicated the game exactly how the rule is written. And there's this outrage like, this is preposterous. How could you possibly do it? He's their star. Oh, so the star player can smack anybody they want. And they're the star player, and they should be left in the game. Well, the NBA is famous for the Jordan rules, and everybody bitched. Maybe they're getting it right. Major League Baseball is famous for putting crap on the baseball. And now everybody's bitching. They're like, you know what we might want to do? Go by the rules. Like, if you're going to bother to write down these rules, why don't you play by it? Again, I'm fine if you're like, yeah, I don't think that was quite enough. Okay, I'm not going to spend any time really arguing. But if you're outraged, and this is ridiculous, stop. You're just part of the Twitter mob. Right? There's all kinds of reasons for this to be the conclusion that was there. Well, I quit watching the game. Yeah, pisser. It sucks. You know who's to blame? Nikola Jokic. It was not a normal foul. If you want to be pissed at somebody, be pissed at Jokic. He quit. Like, that's the other thing. In a society that we love to call everybody quitters, for some reason, he's getting a free pass on it. That's a guy that knew the game was going down the toilet, didn't like the way the calls had gone, knew his team couldn't win anymore, and he quit. He went over and took a blatantly obvious foul that's against the rules. He quit. He begged out of the game. And I love Jokic. I've had him on my fantasy team for 2 years. I love the way he plays. I love that he's not really an athletic guy, and yet he's still the MVP of the league. I love everything about Jokic's game. But what I won't do is compromise my integrity and honesty because I like the guy or I wanted him to have a close game. The way the rule is written, there's every reason for that call to go the way it did. And if this were a regular season game, it absolutely would have gone that way, and people wouldn't have bitched. But because it happened in the playoffs, oh no, for some reason you're supposed to rewrite the rules. Okay, then enjoy all the crap that goes on in baseball. Then make sure you call me and say, I love the unwritten rules of baseball. Don't steal when you're up 3 or 4 or 5 or whenever it is. Pitch inside. As long as it's shoulders down, as long as it's waist down, you sit and bitch and moan to each other about all the unwritten rules of baseball and all that crap because you are asking for unwritten rules. Just don't be a hypocrite. That's all I ask. Stay the course. One more from the NBA. Monty Williams, head coach of the Suns, said Chris Paul's a winner.
You know, he was darn near perfect all night long. Scoring the ball, managing the clock. He and I had communication throughout the game on what was working. They made some adjustments in their pick and roll defense, and so we had to change up where we ran our stuff. We got more in the middle of the floor, and he's just an unbelievable basketball player. But more than that, he has a will to win, and it's impressive to watch and fun to be a part of.
Will to win.
I haven't looked up his one loss record in the playoffs, and by the way, another guy that's a regular on my fantasy team, leads the league in assists for many years, was one of the top steals guys, shoots over 90% from the free throw line, near 50% or better at one point than 50%. I mean, he fits the profile of guys that I like to get on my fantasy team. So I've watched a lot of Chris Paul basketball because he's been on my team many, many times. But a winner?
61-58.
I mean, and isn't there something to be said? You can piss and moan about LeBron James putting together the super teams, which I don't hear anybody bitching about Durant. I guess I do about Durant. Durant had to join the Warriors. Now he's getting – so I guess I do hear it somewhat about Durant. He's a little bit in the same category as LeBron. But isn't there something to be said for the fact that people will join up with you to form a super team? And if they won't, is it because you're not a leader or guys don't really like playing for you? I don't know what it is. Maybe – or you're lazy? You won't make the phone calls? I don't get it because Chris Paul's on the little vacation tour with LeBron and Carmelo and who's the fourth one? And D-Wade and Chris Paul. They were the guys that were always on the water raft getting pulled around by the jet ski or whatever that you'd see in summers. But there's something to be said, like, well, put together your own super team. And if you can't, why not? Listen, they're winning now. He's a winner. Well, he wasn't before this year started in the playoffs. He had a losing record in the playoffs before this year began. So let's slow down. Let's pump the brakes. Everybody just can't wait to get to the front of the bandwagon on guys. And it look, I like Chris Paul more. Well, I used to like Chris Paul more than almost anybody. But, man, you guys have run like 30 miles down past me. Like, slow down. For someone who's watched Chris Paul and Chris Paul in the playoffs before this year, slow down. This team was 8-0 in the bubble last year without Chris Paul. I'm going to tell you, their analytics guys, I know some of them that work in Vegas in the gambling world, that'll tell you they're better without Chris Paul than with Chris Paul. Now, I disagree with that. They've got the numbers to back it up. They say he's terrible defensively and gives up more than what he gains on the offensive side. I disagree with that. I think there's still tweaking to be done in the analytics. I definitely think the Suns are better with Chris Paul than without. But let's slow down. Let's give some credit to the other pieces of the Phoenix Suns that came together to go 8-0 in the bubble and looked like it was all finally being put together there.
21 series in his career. He is 9-12 in those series, which means he was 7-12 coming into this year.
Yeah. So let's settle down a little bit. We will take a break. I think there was an NFL note. Stephen Gilmore. 2019 NFL Defensive Player of the Year, not reporting to mandatory minicamp for the Patriots. So have fun with that. It all looks like it's coming together for the Patriots yet again. And the tightness that limited Trevor Lawrence last week at OTAs, it has reemerged. He was out of the minicamp drills today. They expect that to be the case tomorrow as well. So already the number one overall pick getting behind in his work with the Jags. We will take a break. We'll talk about that and more with Tyler Sullivan, CBS's NFL writer, is next in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
I'm out.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Ready to go? We doing this thing or what?
I'm not opposed. Are you ready to go?
I don't know.
Okay.
I got Stu talking to me.
Stu!
Baseball Tonight coming up with Stu. We're chatting it up there. Look at him. He's just shaking his head. Let's talk some football. All right. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We talked some NFL football. Of course, Tyler Sullivan from CBS Sports joins us on our T-Mobile guest line. Brought to you by my guys at Culligan. My buddy Bob at Culligan can take care of you the way he took care of me and my family. Go to CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob. We had the worst water system ever, ever. Bob came in and said, yeah, you got problems. Yeah, I know. We knew it. Bob set us up. Great water softener now, and also the reverse osmosis. We got bottled water quality coming right out of our faucet. Didn't have to drill anything into the countertop or anything. He's an absolute magician. Call my man Bob. Check him out online at CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob. Tyler, how are you, my friend? Thanks for joining us, buddy.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's start with this Julio Jones trade. Listen, the Falcons had to do it. We were talking to our buddy Chris Domino down in Atlanta during the two-minute drill earlier. They just didn't even have money to sign their draft picks, so he was going to go. When you know that a team has to move a guy, you know, you've kind of got him over a barrel, plus you have to be able to take on a lot of the money. Knowing that all that's – it's not just about player for picks, right? There's the big money part of the equation. Who got the better of that deal?
Right. I mean, you know, and not only that, when you talk about the money standpoint, but when your player goes on television, maybe it was unbeknownst to him or not, and says, I'm out of there, that really does hurt the trade value there as well. So there was a couple of factors in there for Atlanta. But I think you have to look at it from a Titans standpoint and say they really have themselves quite the offense at this point. I don't know how, you know, in terms of 2021, I don't know how you can look at them and not say that they're the winners right now. I mean, now you're looking at an offense that needed some help. I mean, you know, it was an offense that we all know is very good. Some big names. Ryan Tannehill, quality quarterback. Derrick Henry, one of the best bruising running backs in the NFL. A.J. Brown, one of the brightest young receivers. But they did lose Corey Davis over free agency. They did lose Jonnu Smith. Those are some big pieces in the passing game. I know Corey Davis had 90-plus targets in 2020. They needed to fill that production in, and now you're doing it with Julio Jones. And you know, I just don't know what you're going to stop there, whether it's in the red zone, whether it's Henry or Julio or AJ. You know, you're picking your poison there. So I don't know how you don't feel good about the Titans in that AFC South.
I don't mind them walking on Corey Davis for $10 million a year, but to then get older right. and more expensive with Julio Jones, who, while he's played most of the games until last year, it's been several years of him not practicing at all. And I can tell you down in Atlanta, now, of course, you know, things have been sour and probably everybody's not, you know, everything is viewed with a glass half empty approach. They feel like his inability to practice is a big reason why there isn't the chemistry to make those throws into the end zone and create more touchdowns, even though before last year he was still piling up 1,300 plus yards every single year. So I'm kind of, I know this is getting a lot of hype, but How much better is he now? I mean, being a Chiefs fan and looking at the Titans and saying, okay, how much should we worry? How much better is he than Corey Davis right now?
I think that he's much better. Obviously, he's not the Julio Jones they're getting. You know, that's a Hall of Fame player. I don't believe that they're getting that type of a guy. But there is something to be said for that durability standpoint. He's been healthy for most of his career, but played 9 games last year. I mean, and you're talking about a guy that's now on the other side of 30. So there are concerns here. This isn't a slam dunk, Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins type move that's instantly going to improve your offense. This is a different type of move here. But in terms of trying to contend in the AFC, I still think Tennessee's a ways. I mean, I think we were looking at them as a side-by-side favorite in the AFC South with the Indianapolis Colts. Obviously, the big unknown there being with Carson Wentz. But now it's probably a little bit more clear-cut. I mean, we're talking about the division. We're not talking about coming out of the AFC. I don't see them being a 100%, got to always look at them every week, what they're doing in the standings type of threat to Kansas City. But it is going to improve that offense a little bit. So it helps, but I don't know if it's one of those moves that puts them over the top. I don't know if any receiver really does that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if they did get a little bit better, my question is it at the expense of a defense that needs to get a lot better?
Right, and that's the big question with Tennessee. Yes, they needed to replace Jonnu Smith's targets and Corey Davis' targets in some way, shape, or form. But you're looking at that defense and you're saying, your pass rush was deplorable over the last couple of years here. And I know they signed Bud Dupree, but you still don't know what that's going to look like. You know, they were able to get Caleb Farley in the draft, kind of another Jeffrey Simmons-type gamble, a guy that has super high upside. But there's an injury history. If it works out like that, you get a great corner. But to me, it's solely on the defense there. You know, if Bud Dupree can help that, then great. But ultimately, if you can't stop anybody, you're really going to ask Ryan Tannehill and Julio Jones to really cash in on that chemistry, really, because we're going to need to put up a ton of points.
We're talking right now to Tyler Sullivan from CBS. One more on the Titans. Derrick Henry. Like, I know, you rattled off the stars, and Derrick Henry is certainly one of the stars, but how much longer can you expect Derrick Henry to be putting up big numbers? And I bring it up because, we watched – I think if I were to pick a guy who had great success that's the most similar to Derrick Henry, the guy I would pick is Larry Johnson, who played here in Kansas City and had back-to-back 1,700-yard seasons at age 26 and 7 after barely being used at age 24 and 25, and then broke down. And never got to 1,000 yards again, was never the same kind of player. Derrick Johnson is entering his 27-year-old season and has led the league in carries, although the league hasn't gone as insane with carries as they used to. 378 this past year, 303 the year before. 378 is a lot. I almost plan on Derrick Henry breaking down this year, and I think – I would bet money that Derrick Henry will not start 16 games, will not start – or 17 games, but I'd bet that he won't start 16 games either. How much can the Titans' offense – and is that part of the plan here – is to greatly lessen the load on Henry?
Yeah, and you're talking about rushing attempts too, and he led the league with that, but he also led the league in touches. I mean, you're talking about a guy that is having just a tremendous amount of volume, and they're really not easy touches. Like, if we're talking about running backs, Christian McCaffrey gets a lot of touches, but he's getting them in space, in the open field, in the flat. Henry's getting his yards a bruising style. It's very old school the way he's moving the football. And so I do think that there's something to be said for that. Julio Jones wants to be a more of a red zone threat. Maybe this is one of those things where they say, okay, if you're Tennessee, you don't have to hand the rock off to Derrick Henry when you're inside the 5, inside the 10-yard line every single time. Maybe you try to do it a different way with Julio Jones. That's just one theory as to why they maybe make that move. But I do think it's something that's interesting now. I mean, to see what you do. I mean, you look at it, back-to-back 300-plus yard seasons where he's had touches. The year before that, he had 230. I mean, it is a lot to put on a guy. And so to me, I do wonder when eventually we start to see Derrick Henry go down. He's a massive human being. He's almost like a guy you create in Madden. He's like that big. But eventually, they start to slow down. And whether it's injuries or just the physical toll makes you less explosive, I do think it's going to be a fascinating storyline there And I agree with you. It's one of those things. If he cannot stay healthy, that very much limits the ceiling of what Tennessee can do.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the other teams in the AFC. Ravens, Colts, Browns, Bills. These are some of the other teams I think are top contenders. Colts are ones that, you know, I mean, you kind of touched on the quarterback position, but I like that roster. And I like the fact that if I'm a Colts fan, that you're reuniting a quarterback that was playing at an MVP level with the guy who was his offensive coordinator when he did that. Browns are getting a ton of hype, right? Bills are getting quite a bit of hype, just kind of a momentum, a carryover from the season. The Ravens and Colts aren't. How would you rank those four teams as far as challengers to the Chiefs?
I would probably go with Buffalo being the number one threat. Then I would probably go, and again, Indianapolis is such a wild card. But again, like you said, if they can get Carson Wentz right, they even could, you know, go up above above Buffalo there. But ultimately, I put them there, and then I'd probably go with. Do you go with Baltimore? I just don't know. You talk about a contender to the Chiefs, Lamar Jackson, his history against Patrick Mahomes, his history in the postseason hasn't been particularly great. So I'd probably put them at number four on that list.
Okay, and the Browns at number three. So How would you rank the quarterbacks?
And so you rank the quarterbacks. And, again, it is funny you say that. I don't know if it's the exact same because I'm probably flip-flopping or I'm vaulting Lamar Jackson to number two. As weird as it sounds, the talent's there. It's just you wonder when the moment gets brightest. Is he going to be able to elevate where we haven't really been able to see that in the past? They were able to move on a little bit in the postseason this year, get that monkey off of his back. But ultimately, I would go Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, and then Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, if he's that same quarterback we saw last year, he's clearly number four. If he is what Frank Reich was when they were both in Philadelphia together, you vault him up. But right now, I'm going with what I saw most recently, and I would go with him as number four.
Okay, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield are all done with their third season, which is when Jared Goff and Carson Wentz got paid. I don't think the fans of those teams are doing any bragging about that, but it's also when Patrick Mahomes got paid. Are any one or all of those three going to get the long-term extension the way the previous quarterback classes that have had, you know, the success? I mean, those guys haven't had Patrick Mahomes' success, but you know, they have had Jared Goff and Carson Wentz type success. Are they going to get paid, or is the NFL running from that based on what happened with the Goff and Wentz contract?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because I almost feel that Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick, I think he's going to be the outside looking in when we talk about these big contracts. I actually think it's Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and then a distant third, maybe, if they are really feeling anxious to get the deal done, then Baker Mayfield. I think you're more likely to see Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson figure out some sort of contract extension prior to the season than Baker. And I think when you watch these two guys, how this plays out, I do think it's fascinating because who's going to go first? Who's going to set the market? Who is going to try to outdo the other? Because if you're Lamar Jackson and you wait for Josh Allen to go, you have an MVP to point to and say, listen, this is what's in my trophy case. He's been in the conversation last year, but I have the hardware. I have the resume that makes it so I can get a little bit more cash on it. So to me, I think it's really interesting to see how that goes. But you're right. These contracts, as much as, you know, the Chiefs were running to the table to sign Patrick Mahomes, he's a different cat. But sometimes these things don't work out, these contracts. You start with Jared Goff, like you said, it is interesting to see how it goes. One of these quarterbacks is not going to work out. We're going to look back at one of these deals and say, wow, you know, they would really like to have a do-over there. I don't know who that's going to be, but if we're talking about what's going to happen before the start of the season, I do think Jackson and Allen will probably be the ones most likely to get done.
We're talking right now to Tyler Sullivan from CBS Sports. Before I get to the Chiefs, I want to hit on a couple of points of recent note. First, Le'Veon Bell's comments. Has he blackballed himself out of the league? I mean, if you can't come away from playing with Andy Reid or you can't play for Andy Reid, that would seem like a much bigger black mark on you than on Andy Reid. And he ought to take a look around. There's a lot of people, not just head coaches, but coordinators that have ties to Andy Reid. Have we seen the last of Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah, I don't know. There's always a team that takes a chance, you know. So I never say never in the NFL, so it wouldn't surprise me if he lands somewhere. And you know, have we seen the Le'Veon Bell that we saw in Pittsburgh? Will we see that ever again? I tend to think we probably won't see that again. But in terms of him in another NFL uniform, absolutely, I do see some team trying to tap back into that potential. There's too much talent there, or there was too much talent on tape for you not to look in that direction if you are a team that has a hole at running back. But I do think it's an interesting point where you talk about Andy Reid, one of the most respected head coaches in the NFL, one of the great offensive minds. And when you start to burn the bridges, you know, everywhere you go, I know that Adam Gase is kind of, you know, gets made fun of a lot, but when you start to burn that bridge, and then you go to Kansas City and you burn that bridge, you know, a head coach that's making these decisions, or at least collaborating on these decisions, he might not want to bring in, because if it doesn't work out, he's going to badmouth you throughout the press. So, you know, it's not a great PR look for him right now from a couple of different angles. So if I'm his agent, I'm like, hey, man, you know, let's get off social media a little bit. You can feel those things if you'd like. But you know what? Maybe don't bring those things public, because that's going to hurt your value in the free agent market.
How about the new Stephen Gilmore not showing up to mandatory minicamps with the Patriots? How big a concern should that be on any idea of the Pats bouncing back this year?
Yeah, no. I mean, listen, you're talking about a defensive player of the year type of guy. This is something that was kind of expected, right? I mean, we all saw the contract. We all heard the rumblings where he's only going to make a base salary of $7 million this year. For a player of that caliber, well below market value. So when we see him not show up to mandatory minicamp, you can't be overly surprised. You can't say, oh, how did we couldn't even see this coming? Well, yes, you can. You got to look at the contract. If you saw that, you knew. And it was bubbling even last year as well. And the whole reason why the Patriots are in this circumstance is because they moved up some money from his contract in 2021 to 2020 to, you know, to get him into a more respectable level in terms of his contract for 2020. So this is something that's been building for a little bit, but you look at the roster, and if, you know, the Patriots really invested heavily in trying to improve this club to try to bounce back. The most money they've ever spent in a free agent period in the franchise's history. And if you want to contend, you need to have a stellar defense. That's what's helped them go to the past few Super Bowls over the last 5-6 years. And you need a guy like Stephon Gilmore to solidify themselves. They have some young pieces, J.C. Jackson and things of that nature, but you want Stephon Gilmore, if you're Bill Belichick, to try to contend. It just depends on what's the price. And if the price is too high, it looks like they would probably look to trade him. That probably would be the next course of action here. I don't think that he's playing on a $7 million base salary, and I don't know if the Patriots are going to go stretch too far to get him under a big-money deal.
Tyler, looking at the Chiefs, there's a number of reasons as to why they lost to the Bucs. From the Britt Reid situation that happened a couple of days before, I definitely think that at least took Andy Reid out of his game. I think he called one of his worst games. I think they needed to be, you know, with a banged up offensive line, much more of a ground and pound, and say we I know we're known for a high flying offense, but we can't do it. And so I think he had a tough day, and I think there's a lot of reasons as to why he had a tough day. I think it may have taken a lot out of the whole team. The O-line, obviously a big part of the equation, but they also couldn't stop the Bucs. And, you know, they haven't had a lot of resources because they've spent draft picks on players, established players, and they've spent most of their cap. They didn't have a lot of resources to go out and address the defense. They've added Ja Reed from the Seahawks. They've added Nick Bolton in the draft. And then they've got some young guys, and I know you wrote about L'Jarius Sneed as a guy that could really break out for the Chiefs. He's a guy that could really step forward. How much better can the Chiefs expect to be this year on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, no, and like we've been saying about a bunch of these teams, you know, especially with Tennessee earlier, yes, they have these offensive weapons, and the Chiefs, you know, king among them. It is a fantasy football team in terms of the offense. But at the end of the day, like you said, you got to be able to stop these teams. You know, when you allow 26 first downs in the Super Bowl and almost 350 yards of offense, you're not really going to win those football games more often than not. You know, your win probability is going to be tanked there. So I do think that they're going to be better or at least standard quo defensively that we saw during the regular season. You know, I don't know. You're really depending on second year jumps and these younger players just developing in the system and things like that. Maybe it's Tyrann Mathieu going into a contract year, playing, you know, having a career year, something like that. Like, that is what you're aiming for here, because, like you were saying, you know, you can't bring in these high-profile, you know, top-tier talents, whether it's in the first round you're picking later on, or in free agency you're strapped with money. So it is a little bit difficult there. I think what you're going to be banking on a little bit now, too, is where are those, you know, late summer cuts of those defensive stars that want to go win a Super Bowl? Could you find somebody that's going to sign for a little bit cheaper money to sign with you to try to go get a ring and help your defense out? So to me, that's probably the next thing that you should have your eyeball on if you want to help improve that defense, to me, if you're Kansas City.
How about the Chiefs' offensive line? There's a difference between motion and progress. And don't get me wrong, I love what they did. I think they definitely improved the offensive line, you know, particularly when Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz were both hurt, right? It'd be almost impossible to not come back and be better once you cleared out their, you know, the cap room that you could with them and you went out and used those resources. But I've said a lot, and this is before even Kyle Long went down, like Orlando Brown's going to be solid, right? Maybe not spectacular because you're going to ask him to do a lot more one-on-one blocking, and maybe you do have to chip a little more than you want to. But he's at least going to be solid over there. Joe Tooney we know is going to be really good at left guard. I think Creed Humphrey's pedigree and where centers go in the draft means he's going to be pretty good. But right guard and right tackle are big question marks. Lucas Niang was a third-round pick that was hurt at TCU and didn't play last year. Mike Remmers got destroyed at left tackle. I know he played better at right tackle and at guard, but he got destroyed at right tackle. Those are really options A and B at right tackle. At right guard, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif returns after a year of not playing football and also, by the way, not even trying to work out football-wise. I'm sure he worked out. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he's coming in at 185 pounds. But there's a difference at not playing for a year. And by the way, his PFF grade wasn't very good the last year that he played. Who am I forgetting at right guard? There's somebody else that's in the mix at right guard. Anyway, Austin Blythe, if he doesn't win the center spot, or Creed Humphrey, if Blythe does, one of those guys factoring over there. But I think the right side of the offensive line is a bigger question mark, and it would have been great to see Kyle Long return to form. I'd have felt a lot better, but he's already hurt, and his football card says he's going to be hurt. So are people jumping the gun at saying it's all fixed along the offensive line for the Chiefs a little too early?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you have to look at it like you were saying. You know, they've done the right things in terms of bringing in star talent to try to fix the problem, and like you were highlighting on the left side. But there's also just the standpoint of, yes, you can have all this talent in the world, but they also need time to build this chemistry up. I mean, you know, you look at, you know, Dallas famously has a great offensive line, has had one for quite some time. A lot of familiar faces on there, able to build some chemistry as to why they're one of the better offensive lines in football. There's a lot of stability when you look at that area of a football team. And so, you know, as talented as a unit collectively as this Chiefs offensive line is, I do wonder, you know, how long is it going to take for everybody to get on the same page? I know we're in June. We have plenty of time for them to figure that out. But there is that standpoint of, well, okay, now you only have three preseason games before this thing gets going, and you have a half a billion dollar quarterback that you're trying to protect over the course of 17 games now. So to me, that's one thing that I'm paying attention to more so than how the personnel is going to shake out. Once they figure that out, how is the chemistry between that unit going to kind of formulate, and how quickly will it formulate?
The other guy, Andrew Wiley, was who I was forgetting, who started at right guard and then started in the Super Bowl at right tackle, and he got destroyed over there at right tackle. And then I know they're very high on Trey Smith, and most people think he was, you know, more of like a second-round pick type of guard or right tackle type, and I am quite optimistic, but he's battled health issues with lung clots, you know, in his time at Tennessee as well. But I think the best-case scenario is if Lucas Niang is playing right tackle and Trey Smith is playing right guard, it means the young guys have won the job. And by the way, they could use in Creed Humphrey playing as well as a rookie. They could use some guys who are well above average, not making enormously more than average money at the position, because they are one of they are a team that's trying to do it. Stars and Jags, right? Frank Clark's the highest salary cap number of anybody not playing quarterback. You know, Orlando Brown's not expensive now. Joe Tooney is expensive right now. Anthony Hitchens is one of the most expensive middle linebackers out there in the NFL. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce up there as far as high-priced players. And Tyrann Mathieu has, I believe, the highest salary cap hit this year if they don't get a renegotiation and extension done for him. You know, can this system work, the Stars and Jags approach, or are they, you know, they better get it done this year because they're looking at Atlanta Falcons cap hell here real soon?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you have Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, the ultimate eraser. You know, I'm here in New England based, you know, I saw it for 20 years where these rosters in New England weren't particularly great. There were some cap issues, but at the end of the day, they have Tom Brady, and somehow it's like the magic eraser. It didn't really make a difference. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes certainly on that track as one of the great young quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't even know if I want to call him young anymore. He's just one of the great quarterbacks in the NFL. And so he does correct a lot of those problems, particularly if you start to get into that cap area. But you do have to cash in on these opportunities when you have a roster like this right now. You're not going to be able to keep everybody, even, you know, as much as as much as, you know, Tyrann Mathieu may want to stay in Kansas City, can they afford him? And, you know, we're still trying to figure all that out. And but you have him under contract for this year, and try to cash in on that defense, try to cash in on the pieces that you have while they're still in Kansas City. So to me, yes, Patrick Mahomes is able to fix a lot of things, a lot of deficiencies on this roster. But when you have the talent that's currently on this team, you got to cash in on it now and worry about tomorrow later.
Tyler Sullivan from CBS Sports is with us here. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent or orthopedic sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours to see you quickly. Get an appointment right now at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Four quickies. I'll start you with this. The Chiefs' record will be what this year at the end of the regular season, 17 games?
They will be the number one seed in the AFC, and I'm probably looking at a, what would it be now, 14-3? That sounds about right.
Okay. All right. I'll take it. Julio Jones, yards and TDs, your expectations for this year would be what?
If he does not have 8 touchdowns and 1,100 yards with about 75 receptions, then it would be a disappointment.
Okay. All right. Very good. Tell me, how long is Urban Meyer last in Jacksonville?
It does seem like it's going to be shorter than longer, doesn't it? But I would probably say for the foreseeable future, I don't think that you're going to throw Trevor Lawrence in a coaching change within the next 3 years. So I give him 3 years to really right the ship.
Okay. I'll put 3+ down. Finally, did you watch the Nuggets-Suns game?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Well, I saw the Jokic swing, but that was about it.
Is that a flagrant foul?
He did wind up, but I don't know if he made too much contact. I mean, he made contact, but I don't know. You know, if it was my dad's NBA, probably not. But in today's NBA, certainly is.
There you go. There you go. Good answer. Good answer. I like that one. Well said. Well put. Tyler, always fun talking to you, buddy. I really appreciate the time. Stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, you bet. Tyler Sullivan from CBS Sports does a great job covering the NFL, brought to you by our friends at Culligan Water. For more than 50 years, Culligan has been giving you the best tasting, healthiest, cleanest water around. I know my man Bob took care of me and my family. He can take care of you. Go to CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob and let my man Bob make sure your family has the best water in town, just like he did for me and my family. He knows what the Kansas City water is. You ought to hear him break it down. He's like a scientist. Hey, this particle, that particle. He'll take care of you the way he took care of me and my family. Go to CulliganKansasCity.com/Bob.
The Program with Seren Petro.
What a dumbass.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the Program.
But first, the Jazz into the hour answer. Who was the oldest player with 25 points and 10 assists in a playoff series all
Chris
time?
Paul, that's
Chris
easy.
Paul,
like, you're lazy. Remember when you tried on these questions? That was awesome.
I don't remember that at all.
That was great. Jazz playing for great Cajun food from Jazz, the Louisiana Kitchen. Who was it before him?
I have no idea.
You don't know because ESPN didn't do it for you, so you're not going to do any legwork.
I'm not going to look at anything.
Fat, lazy.
There was like some kind of a
fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
There was some kind of a reference site that I could use for that. I might,
if only there
I
was. And a device that had all the answers ever in the world, right?
Actually, I actually did have one. I just forgot. Longest winning streak ever in playoffs in NBA. We'll ask you tomorrow.
Okay, good. You know, today is corn on the cob day, Curtis.
Mm.
Are you a fan of corn on the cob?
Big
There's
fan.
Some people that don't like they don't like to work for the corn on the cob.
No.
I like the challenge of seeing if I can get a half stick of butter to stay on it with about 3.5 pounds of salt while I motor around it, you know, and then try to subtly dip the butter, the corn in the butter, and not look too obvious, and slurp as I'm, you know, inhaling the butter. You can't just put half a stick of butter on corn on your plate. But for some reason, it's socially acceptable to try to roll it onto your corn on the cob. So I'm a fan of today.